Matt Sullivan here to remind you to stop putting screens on your gutters. Better to schedule a free estimate with the local experts at Gutter Helmet so you stay off the ladder. Visit gutterhelmetindy.com. With Gutter Helmet, you'll never clean your gutters again. gutterhelmetindy.com.
Good morning. It is Thursday, April 11th. It is 7 minutes after nine. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So, Rob, if I say it's coming in hot, what do you think I'm talking about? I'm not talking about how I drove into work today, because let me tell you, the potholes are just more like, huge lakes on Washington.
Hey, question for you, because you live literally 5 minutes from the radio station. Mm-hmm. So was it a crawl for you to get into work today?
No, it wasn't so bad. I was just avoiding all of the mini lakes that the potholes were creating.
Oh my goodness. Like it normally takes me 30 minutes to get in from Brownsburg to downtown. And it took like 50 minutes today. It was so, and the whole trip was slow. Mm-hmm. And it is though, and I always find this fascinating. So this happens every year with the first snow of the year.
Yeah.
And then it seems like we repeat this in the spring with the first big rain of the year, where people just simply forget how to properly drive an automobile.
So it took you a little longer, huh?
I'm glad you didn't have that, but I do agree. There does appear to be some rather serious issues with public infrastructure across central Indiana, because from Brownsburg to Indianapolis and all points in between, there appear to be some serious issues with the flooding.
Yeah, lots of flooding. And so when I say coming in hot, wasn't talking about my driving on the way into work today. Of course, we're talking about inflation. And it ran hot for the third straight month. Overall prices increased by 3.5% from last year.
I remain amazed at the tolerance that people have for the way we are being governed. And this is a statement on both parties, because both parties share the blame on this. Because since the Republicans have been elected, and they were elected and ran on, their words, not mine, stopping Joe Biden. But since the Republicans have been elected, they have just repeatedly, time and again, rolled over and approved the overwhelming majority of Biden's spending priorities. And yet nobody, and I think this is what's most frustrating for many people, is most of these politicians appear to have literally zero recognition of how they are crushing society.
Their rising costs in rent, in gasoline, the volatile food prices. And what you hear all the time is how there's so many jobs that are being added. So many jobs. If they could break that down to how many are consumer jobs, private sector versus government jobs, I think you'd get a better picture. Because a lot of government jobs does not grow the GDP. That's not a sign of productivity.
Yeah, okay. So, but let's talk about kind of the races locally that I think are super interesting, because let's just review some of the ads being run on our radio station from these candidates for a variety of offices. Because what we're trying to talk about here is this stuff keeps happening. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens because of the behavior of politicians. And yet, like, the total hot button race is the 5th congressional district. And you look at the ads that are being run right now. Victoria Spartz is running ads calling Chuck Goodrich China Chuck. Mm-hmm. Chuck Goodrich is running ads talking about how Victoria Spartz is basically a lunatic with her employees. And then you got Raju, who sounds like he's trying to sell you some ice cream to sit on your front porch and eat some apple pie in front of your American flag. Uh-huh. None of these ads, and while we chuckle how we love the Raju ad, none of these ads, or none of the core of like the 5th congressional district, is talking about the issues.
The things that affect people.
Right. So let's take the 6th, mm-hmm. which is Jefferson Shreve. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in Jefferson Shreve's ads. All of the Shreve ads are telling you how he's conservative. Not one of his ads is telling you how he's actually going to go to Washington and fight for you. Same thing with Mike Speedy, who's probably the other front runner. None of his ads are addressing how Mike Speedy is going to go and get spending under control, because the reality is, whether it's Shreve on the Indianapolis City Council or Mike Speedy as a member of the Indiana General Assembly, they both time and time again were big spenders and in many cases big taxers. So whether it is Goodrich and Spartz who won't address spending and inflation, or it is the 6th, where it's Shreve and Speedy who won't address inflation, there's nothing in any of these people's campaigns that are telling you that they're going to make the issue any better. Look, I quite frankly don't care if Victoria Spartz is mean to her employees. I simply don't care. If you don't like the way she governs her office, don't work there. However, I will say Victoria Smart's actual record has not done anything to help inflation. That's a fair game thing. So I think people are sitting around going, wait a second, what are you going to do for me? Not what are you going to do for me in the handout sense, not what are you going to do for me in the sense of how many freebies you can give me, but what are you going to do for me to make it so that I can afford food at the grocery store?
Well, and that's just it. When you talk about food, that is the big sticking point when you consider that groceries are 21% more expensive than they were just a year ago. So you take a $100 bill, you go to the grocery store. A year ago, you could have had 32 items in your cart. Now you have to take 10 items out. So what are the 10 items you're not going to do with? Are you going to get rid of the milk or the eggs or the dish soap? These are the decisions that we're having to face. What are the 10 items I'm not taking home with me today from the grocery store?
And the government keeps interfering, and this is the big thing. So everybody got their property tax bill. Mm-hmm. And I talked about how my property taxes went up $175. And we talked about how that was a mixture of things. It was these crappy assessments, this total bullcrap assessment process where your taxes increase based on whether someone else sold their home. Casey, this is a true story. There is a lady who lives down the street from me who it seems like every 3 or 4 months tries to sell her house. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I think she has a somewhat unreasonable value of what her home is worth. However, I now get a panic every 3 or 4 months when she puts that home up for sale, because if there is some sucker who buys that home for that price, mm-hmm. it will so elevate the value of my home based on how we do the taxes.
You're afraid that your property taxes will go up even more.
Because she will reset mm-hmm. the market.
Yep.
And every time, every 3 or 4 months when she gets a wild hair up her backside and she puts her home up for sale again, I literally go into a panic, and I just every day when I drive home want to make sure that that for sale sign is still up in front of that house. Because I know the system is set up to where I'm going to get screwed if she sells her home.
And you're dependent on your neighbors at that point.
So that's one side of the equation on how government's screwing us. The other side is, like where I live, the infinite wizards of smart who run my community, the five Mensa members who run Warehouseburg there on the west side, mm-hmm. created their own massive tax increase. Not only did my taxes go up because of the assessment, my taxes went up because of the whatever it was, 22, almost 23% local tax increase that took place from five supposed Republicans. So I'm looking at this going, now I have to go literally work an extra day at the golf course. An entire day I'm going to have to be away from my family. I have two choices. I can either eat it and cut my expenditures somewhere else and not, like you said, talk about buying food or whatever.
Take the 10 items out.
As the man of the house, mm-hmm. I have to go work an entire extra day and be away from my family. This is where government is directly screwing people, Casey, and it's bipartisan. It's not conservative or liberal. It's not Democrat or Republican. It's both sides are not working for us.
And here's Senator Ron Johnson, and he is saying that so many people are not connected the dots on this.
And the young people don't realize the reason you cannot buy a home is because this massive deficit spending, driving up the cost of homes, sparking 40-year high inflation, driving up mortgage payments. They're not making the connection, the pain, the fact that a dollar they held at the start of the Biden administration is only worth 84 cents. That's why you can't afford groceries. But that's because of massive deficit spending. And the news media, just like they won't point out the catastrophe that is the open border, they're not connecting the dots between the massive deficit spending and all the pain Americans are feeling because of inflation.
Stop spending our money.
Yeah, I mean, look, I I'm not doing this. Don't cry for me, Argentina, right? I mean, nobody's going to shed a tear for me. But here's the deal. I work a full-time job Monday through Friday. I work usually mm-hmm. 16 to 20 hours at a second job on the weekends. I'm not some lazy guy asking for a handout. And I know many people are in the same boat I'm in. I don't want free stuff. I don't want the government to do anything for me. All I want is for my government to stop doing things, whether it is the local government's actually raising taxes or this just horrific, the state government have a horrific system where my taxes go up because of something someone else did. All I want is for the government to stop screwing me over, Casey, period. That's it. I don't think that's too much to ask.
You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Casey question.
Yeah, what's that, Rob?
How would you like to get a 13% bonus when you invest your money?
Yes, please. And not only do you get a 13% bonus, you'll also get an annual return that's averaged 7% a year for the past 10 years.
Greetings, it's Kendall and Casey. Discover how you can get an upfront 13% bonus, 1.3% sign bonus, plus a competitive annual return that's averaged 7% a year for the past 10 years.
You can learn more from the retirement guy that we trust. His name, Bill Demery, and he's right here in Indy. Call him, 317-932-9912.
This was such a no-brainer for me, Casey.
Yeah, right? You get an upfront 13% bonus, plus an annual return that's averaged 7% a year for the past 10 years.
Yeah, she said plus. P-L-U-S plus. And it's backed by one of the largest insurance companies in the world. So call Bill Demery now at 317-932-9912. 317-932-9912.
Past performance is no guarantee of future returns.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
So he turned a $600,000 wager into $2.76 million. Hey, it's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. I can't even imagine making a $600,000 wager to begin with, but that's what Dave Portnoy did when he claimed at the beginning of the season that University of Connecticut men's basketball team would prevail in the championship game over Purdue, which in fact they did. He turned that into over $2.5 million.
Yeah, so he got them at plus 340. So Dave Portnoy is the guy, I guess you would say now again, he owns Barstool because Barstool was sold and they tried to go mainstream with, I think Penn Gaming was who bought them. It didn't work out. And then there was some deal where he got Barstool back. And the Barstool guy, Portnoy, is fascinating because I still have no idea how he actually makes money. I mean, he clearly has huge amounts of disposable income.
Well, but I think he makes money by betting sometimes.
Well, but what's interesting to me is they tried to mainstream Barstool through Penn Gaming and it didn't work. And so I don't know how, if Penn Gaming, one of the largest gaming entities in the world, couldn't figure out how to make it work mainstream. I don't know how they're doing it. But clearly they are, because he's a world traveler. He has his own jet, I think. I mean, the guy is, you know, a total juggernaut. And one of the things he does, and I think he learned this, there's a guy named Mattress Mac is what he goes by. And Mattress Mac is this huge mattress dealer in Houston. And for years, Mattress Mac, anytime a Texas-based team is involved in some sort of, whether it's college or pro or whatever, the championships with the World Series, Super Bowl, he will wager a sizable amount of money on that team, and he ties it into his business where he says, hey, if you bought a mattress during these 2 weeks in the lead up to the Super Bowl and the Dallas Cowboys win the Super Bowl, your mattress is on me because I'm winning so much money betting. So literally, this Mattress Mac guy figured out how to not lose, yet he gets, he'll be in USA Today, we'll be talking about him, all the sports stations will talk about. He gets probably billions of dollars in earned media. It's just a brilliant marketing ploy. Barstool guy has figured out, because apparently he has this large amount of disposable income, he can make these bets and everybody starts talking about Barstool and, hey, Portnoy did this and Barstool did that.
It changes the odds. His bets are so large.
Yes, it's incredible. Now, he loses a whole bunch. Like, he was on a huge losing streak, I believe it was in the NCAA tournament, where he was not talking about how much he was actually betting, but he does hit these. Like, he hit Michigan. That's what it was. I think during bowl season, he had lost a whole bunch. And then he bet everything on Michigan because he's a huge Michigan guy to win the national championship. They did. He cashed, he cashed out. Then I think he did this again during the NCAA tournament where he lost a whole bunch and then he wins. And, let's say he loses $1 million throughout the whole process. He gets untold amounts of earned media. And this is what these super rich connected guys have figured out, is it's almost like a loss leader.
Yeah.
It's almost like, okay, even if I lose $100,000 or $200,000 or $250,000,
it's worth it.
The amount of publicity I get is totally worth it.
He said that the bet against the bet for UConn against Purdue was the greatest bet of his life, clearly. And you mentioned, how does he make money? Well, he was betting on Barstool Sportsbook, but now he's placing his bets with DraftKings, which is a change. And now he has bet another one, and this is on Scottie Scheffler in the Masters.
Okay, so that's what you, like, I think the Barstool, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think the Barstool Sportsbook was the Penn gaming aspect of this. Penn bought Barstool. They tried to create, like, ESPN now as a betting a betting app, and they tried to do that, and I don't think it worked for him. So yes, so here is what he did. So Scottie Scheffler right now, I believe, is 4-1 to win the Masters. It is the lowest. So in sports betting, lowest means you're the favorite, right? So it's the lowest betting odds for someone ever at the Masters not named Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. It's insane. Scottie Scheffler is the best golfer in the world right now, playing the best. He's won two out of the last three tournaments he's played in. He lost the other one by one shot. And other than he is in Tiger Woods, so people who remember golf, Tiger Woods in his prime, we're talking like Tiger 2000, 2001, 2002. Tiger Woods is the only player ever in the history of golf in the modern era to ever have odds that were better than what Scottie Scheffler has right now. So 4-1 means for every $1 you bet, you'd win $4. And here's what I've told people about betting the Masters this week. In hindsight of the NCAA tournament, like, I bet UConn to win it. But I did it begrudging. Like, I was so, it took me so long to pull the trigger on it because I thought, how often does the favorite actually win? These odds aren't that great. UConn was the overwhelming favorite. And Hammer and I were talking about it yesterday. I said, in hindsight, everybody looks at that tournament and goes, oh, it was so obvious UConn was so much better than everybody else. I feel like the Masters is the same way. Scottie Scheffler is the overwhelming favorite. The overwhelming favorite very rarely actually wins the thing, but he's playing so much better than everybody else, and he's already won at the Masters before. Uh-huh. And it's like, I just feel like on Sunday, we're going to look at this and go, hey, in hindsight, that was like free money.
So
how did we not take the free money?
There is something that could derail Scottie Scheffler, and we're going to get into that at 10 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, but that's a pretty big thing.
Dave Portnoy's bet was a $300,000 bet that Scheffler was going to win the Masters. It changed the odds from +450 to +400 because it was such a large amount of money. Dave Portnoy could win $1.35 million.
Yeah, and again,
not a bad day at the office if he wins.
When you think about it, and the Masters has been delayed, this is why you're getting such good effort from me this morning, Casey. The opening tee shot now is not until 10:30, I believe. So second half of the show, totally on you, but I'm giving maximum effort here to make up for that.
Thank you.
When you think about, he's playing against 100 other guys. Like, this isn't basketball. This isn't football. You're playing against 100 other guys where if any one of those guys, because they're all professionals. I mean, there's a couple of amateurs that qualify, but they're, for the most part, all professionals who are capable of winning that tournament. It is insane that Scottie Scheffler is that good, playing that well right now, that he is 4-1 in a professional golf tournament.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk about basketball. You mentioned that. We're going to talk about the Caitlin Clark effect and also the rock star who's coming to town who kissed me on the cheek once. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Peace out. It's the farewell tour, and it's coming back to Indy. It is 9:34 with Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So Aerosmith going to be rocking Gainbridge Fieldhouse January 16th, 2025. They're bringing the Black Crowes with
2025.
Them.
2025?
Yeah.
So they had scheduled this, right? And then Steven Tyler had some sort of vocal affliction.
A fractured larynx
Ooh, what it was. Terrible.
And from what I've read, you have to have some sort of impact on your larynx for that to be fractured. I don't know if he actually hurt himself like in a car accident or something. They never actually said how he hurt himself. But that it actually can be life-threatening because it can block your airway.
Well, he is 76, so he just turned 76. So he will still be 76 years old when the tour comes to Gainbridge. And isn't it interesting, Casey, and I don't know how you feel about this, but these rock and roll stars, many of them, most of them who are alive and with us, have decided to trudge forward well into their later years in life. And I would be curious where you're at with this. I've talked about how I just simply have refused to go to this Springsteen tour, even though it's very likely going to be the final one with the E Street Band in full, because while it's still, from a nostalgia standpoint, great, I simply do not want to remember my hero as a guy who was a little slower and a little less active on stage. I just can't bring myself to do that. So I don't know where you're at on seeing these people who, nothing against Steven Tyler, nothing against Aerosmith, but let's face it, at 76 years old, it's not going to be what he was when he was 25 or 30 years
right,
old.
Right, exactly. He may still have the scarves hanging all over the microphone, and I even question, will his voice be the same? I mean, he's known for his screaming vocals, right? Is he going to be able to do that? And it's not the same. I saw Elton John a few years back, and he sat at the piano the entire time he played. I know he was just here recently, so I don't know if it's different now. But when I saw him, he sat at the piano the whole time. It was like he couldn't even get up and walk around stage because he was having hip problems. And that's not the concert experience that you want to see from your rock stars, right? You want to see him running around on stage, screaming, hitting the high notes, and, you know, slamming the guitars down and flipping the microphone because they're rock and roll guys. I mean, Aerosmith, Steven Tyler, like you mentioned, 76. He kind of looks like a grandma now at this point.
Well, and this and look, this is, as concerts got corporatized many years ago, this started happening. But the actual fan has long largely been pushed out of the arena of certainly premium seating, but in many cases, affordability of the tickets altogether. And these concerts, especially from these aging rock stars, has largely become this corporatized event, which is more about an entertainment, an evening of entertainment, or people not mega fans of the band finding something to do for the evening, rather than how concerts used to be, which is, oh my gosh, my favorite group is coming to town and I'm camping out for tickets and I'm camping out in front of the arena and I'm making a whole day of it. Like those days that are just, they're gone. They're over with, and it's just simply unaffordable for many people. So now you have some, you know, just watered down form of entertainment rather than what it kind of all used to be about.
Well, and that's just it. This is apparently their farewell tour.
Is it, Casey?
Well, that's what they're claiming. So if you are a hardcore Aerosmith fan, I guess this is your last opportunity to see them live.
And no doubt they'll sell out. And no doubt Aerosmith has legions of people who love them and who have seen them for many years. I just think the conversation is like, what year would this have been? In 2015, I saw Bob Seger at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And it was still Bob Seger. And he did all the hits.
Yeah.
And he told a lot of good stories. But Bob Seger was never an overly handsome man to begin with. And he just looked like he was about 9 million years old up there. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, I'm glad, I guess, from a like historical standpoint, I can always say I saw Bob Seger.
Right.
But if you saw Bob Seger during the Live Bullet era, where he was a madman running around stage and, you know, one of the great live albums of all time. I mean, that he was such a great live performer that literally most of the Bob Seger songs, many of the Bob Seger songs you hear on the radio are actually from that Live Bullet album. It's this super rare thing where live music is kind of the preferred method of many of his songs for radio stations and still is. But it's like, I don't know, man. I think if I saw him in 1980 or 1976, I'd be a little bumming right now.
Do the Black Crowes add any element to you? Like, you're like, for you. Like, you want to see the Black Crowes, so that's going to get you there.
Like, well, not for me. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Is there still an army of Black Crowes fans out there? I mean, they were obviously very big in the what would be the 90s, right? They were kind of their early 90s was their, mid 90s was their kind of peak performance. I don't know. I've never been a fan of the opening act.
Really?
And I know
you
that
go
probably,
for, you go for the
it probably makes
main title.
Look, I freely admit I am a musical snob because my hero was known for 3 hour and 30 minute concerts. So he didn't, there was no opening act required. There was no intermission. If you can't keep up, then brother, this might not be the show for you. And I know that most shows do have an opening act. It always just seemed like kind of a cop out to not have to work as hard to me.
Have I told you that I kissed Steven Tyler?
No, go on.
You know, I tried
tell us
to,
more.
I tried to run my fingers through his hair.
I'm sure you did.
They got caught.
How did that work?
A lot of hairspray there.
Now, look, I'm not going to judge anyone, Casey, because that's not what we do here. But if you want to talk about high traffic district, I think Steven Tyler, I think he might have had a partner or two, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yes, I would agree. Okay, talk about seeing someone on the road. How about seeing them on your television? The Indiana Fever have announced that 30 36 of their 40 regular season games are going to be on national television for this quickly approaching 24 season.
Well, look, and I don't know. I assume, and I know it's dangerous to do, but I would assume that the, I mean, I know the tickets have gone on sale. I don't know if every game is completely sold out or not. I would guess it is, or very, very close. And
tickets go on sale April 15th.
I'm sorry. But maybe there was a pre-sale that was what I was thinking of, because yeah. I know people definitely have shown copies of tickets. So there must have been a pre-sale of some sort.
There was a promotion.
Okay, thank you. Very good. Okay. So again, and I know we've used this example before, but the only thing that I can think of in terms of like taking a niche sport, because Michael Jordan obviously changed the game of basketball and was this star that was almost bigger than the game itself. But there was a lead up to that. Like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson redefined the NBA. They brought interest back to the NBA. Michael Jordan took it to new heights. But there was interest in the NBA before Michael Jordan got there. The two examples that I can think of a single person changing a sport are, and fitting because today's the Masters, is Tiger Woods in 1996 when he showed up on the PGA Tour. Uh-huh. And as we said before, Wayne Gretzky in the late 80s when he was traded to the Los Angeles Kings and the revamped interest in the National Hockey League. That's all I can think of in terms of an individual who has taken a niche sport and brought large-scale, immense interest into mainstream society. That's all I can think of, Casey. Maybe there are other examples, but they're not dawning on me right now.
And this is all part of the Caitlin Clark effect. So some of these games are going to be broadcast on ABC, ESPN, and also Amazon Prime. But it's not just the television deal that is changing because of her entering the WNBA. The Las Vegas Aces have said that they're going to move their game against Indiana to T-Mobile Arena because they can accommodate 6,000 more fans than their home venue. And also the Phoenix Mercury, this will be the game to watch. It happens on June 30th, and it's already being dubbed the Goat versus the Rook. And this is when Diana Taurasi.
Taurasi, yes.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
She's going to be playing against Caitlin Clark.
Okay.
So that'll be a matchup to watch.
So two things with this, because we live in a world of reality here, right? And the first part of this reality is, economically, she is going to be a total game changer for the city of Indianapolis. She is going to be, at least for the beginning, the only person we've ever seen that probably had this impact was Peyton Manning, mm-hmm. right? Like the Colts were this floundering franchise. Yes, I know they had the letter rip guys with Harbaugh and they almost went to the Super Bowl, but let's face it, the Colts were a largely pathetic franchise the first 10, 12 years that they were here. They were, for the most part, bottom feeders, not a playoff team, etc. Peyton Manning not only makes them a good football team, he literally changed the skyline. Lucas Oil Stadium literally exists because of Peyton Manning. No Peyton Manning, they're probably still playing in the RCA Dome. And it is so rare that an athlete has the ability to single-handedly change the makeup of the total infrastructure of the city. And Caitlin Clark will do that. She will not only make these games sold out, she will be a corporate juggernaut. Politicians will want to be photographed mm-hmm. with her. Now, my theory on this, and we'll see if we are still blessed to be working here, oh, I don't know, say a year, let's say 1 year from now, because the first WNBA season will be over. I think you will begin to see some of that Beatlemania type of fervor for her wear off. Does it mean instantaneously? No, but the sport itself is not popular. Women's basketball is simply not mainstream. It's simply not popular. It's simply not something people clamor for. And so unless she does ultimately prove to be this unbelievable world beater, people are just going to, it's going to kind of outside of Indianapolis wear off.
I wonder if she's already looking at places to live. Because their season starts in
yeah,
like a month.
It does, and it's a quick turnaround. You know, and again, to use the example of hockey, because Tiger was bigger than the sport himself. He was, some of it was obviously, he was the first kind of megastar black golfer. I mean, there were just so many components to Tiger that made him bigger than golf, and he obviously lifted golf to where it is this now multi-billion dollar industry, and these guys are making insane amounts of money. Tiger Woods was actually able to lift the sport from a sustained standpoint to where it became bigger than anybody could have ever imagined. Hockey, though, is probably the best parameter. And what you saw with hockey was Gretzky for about 5 years lifted that sport. And then people are kind of like, I never was really all that into hockey, and I've seen Gretzky, and I've seen him in person, and now he's getting older, and he's not doing all the things he used to do, and now hockey's in its sport again. And so hopefully she will have a 5, 6, 7 year shelf life. And for the city, it'll be great if she has that 5, 6, 7 year shelf life where we can get all sorts of economic benefit out of it. And we can raise the level of commerce in the city. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens.
All right. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Well, his milkshakes bring all the votes to the yard, votes to the yard, the votes to the yard. Donald Trump frying some milkshakes. It's 10 minutes in front of 10. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So he stopped into a Atlanta Chick-fil-A, ordered 30 milkshakes for customers inside the restaurant, and then and then said it was really good chicken.
Can I have 30 milkshakes and also some chicken? And we're going to take care of the customers. This business is good. Making a lot of money. Getting rich, right? Thanks very much. Look at the way you're home. They like each other, right?
So he asked them if they were getting rich, probably not working at a fast food restaurant, but that's a nice effort. But there's the difference between what Donald Trump did. He goes to this Chick-fil-A and was posing with pictures, many black voters. And then you had Joe Biden, who sat down at that dinner for a highly produced, highly edited video. Which one looked more real to you?
Well, and so I was going to say that one of the things about Trump is, and it is so rare, is he is, look, clearly, Donald Trump is a very elite individual. He has spent most of his life around the nicest meals and locations and women and whatever else imaginable. Yet he has this incredible ability to interact with regular people. Mm-hmm. And it is so rare, especially of someone's fame and wealth of Trump, but a politician, period. Like, I mean, if you've ever been around these political people, some of them are the most awkward, just quite frankly, bizarre people imaginable. It's like it's very hard to have a normal interaction with them.
Very awkward or huge egos thinking that they're above you.
And Trump has this incredible ability to walk into a Wendy's or in this case, a Chick-fil-A and actually know what he's doing. Remember when Bush was president, old man Bush was president. One of the things that derailed his campaign in 1992 was he goes into a supermarket and appears to have no idea how the
scanner.
Scanner works, and people are going, wait a second.
You're not a regular person.
Right, and not that that is a big deal. The policies are all that matter, but to people it is, right? I mean, we had a conversation yesterday with somebody, and we talked a lot about this, about how we are so into this being like you and me and the people who work at this radio station. We are so into politics, and we are so into government, and we sometimes lose sight of the fact that regular people just aren't that into it. And sometimes we have to be reminded of that. And Trump, with things like this, is able to connect. Like, he just looks like a normal. There's no way Biden could pull that off.
No, go into a Chick-fil-A and order 30 milkshakes. He said, I want to take care of the people here inside the restaurant.
Like, okay, serious challenge for Joe Biden. Could he do this? If you told Joe Biden right now, you must get in an automobile. You must drive to a McDonald's. You must use the kiosk and order the food and pay for the food at the kiosk, then get the food, make sure your order's correct, get back in the car, drive back to your location of origin. Not something that literally millions upon millions of normal people do every single day. Do you think he could do that?
No, absolutely not. It doesn't even look like he can walk across the grass with the prime minister of Japan without marching in some weird way. You've seen all of the pictures of his notes when he was having press conferences yesterday. They've predetermined which reporter he's going to call on. His answers are all printed out in front of him. And even with the answers in front of him, he stumbles through it. He couldn't even make a toast on his own that wasn't all predetermined. Like, no, the man does not look like he can function, let alone go into McDonald's.
But this is my point. If somebody could not execute a trip to a McDonald's and order food and make it home, do you really want that person being president? Now, I somebody in the YouTube chat, Trump didn't drive himself to Chick-fil-A. Trump could. There's video of Trump driving himself. Trump knows how to drive an automobile. Like, Trump could. I have no doubt Donald Trump could physically, from his home, from Mar-a-Lago, get in a car, drive to a McDonald's, could actually operate the kiosk, get the food, make sure the order was correct, and come home. I have zero doubt in my mind he could pull that off. And that's such a small standard, but the current president cannot do that, Casey.
No, they have to put X's on stages to tell him where to stand.
And it's not just because he's an out-of-touch political elitist. It's because mentally he couldn't pull it off.
If nothing else, Donald Trump could charm his way into somebody helping him.
That's right.
It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Good morning. People looking back.